Welcome to an all new episode of the Lisa Ann Experience. I am your host and happy to be in your ears or in your face on my YouTube premiere that is every Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern time. I want to extend my gratitude for you, my listener, for taking the time to listen to my voice, as irritating as it is to me, as soothing as it may be to others. I thank you. If you're a repeat offender, a return listener, I thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing. And you newbies need to go out and do the same. It helps a podcaster a lot. Please do it immediately. My flavor of the day of Fit Soda right here, orange cream. I love the fact that I feel like I'm getting something sweet that I shouldn't be having. It's a super guilty pleasure, but it's awesome for me because it has everything I need. I did a killer workout this morning and I'm getting my benefits with Bubbles, aminos for recovery, electrolytes for hydration, no artificial flavors, colors, or preservatives. It is sugar-free and it is vegetarian, baby. Let's go. So here we are. It's April. We're close to my big birthday, which I'm super excited about for an endless amount of reasons. Like, I can't even tell you all the reasons because I just am. I am because I've done so many things that I never sat and thought about until we were stuck in our houses during the pandemic. And that was really when I had like this come to Jesus moment with myself. And I was like, you know what? Everybody doesn't get it and nobody will get my life that I've lived. But holy moly, I got to go through all of my hard drives and look at all the photos that I took in all of my travels. There were places that I forgot. Like, I forgot I lived in Budapest for almost a month. I forgot all of the things. I mean, in casual, you remember that you did them. But when I had that time to actually sit down and take inventory of my life, I was never more proud. The travels, the people, the interactions, and the experiences. Unbelievable sense of pride. And that's where this joy comes from. With my 50th birthday. Going back to shoot photos in LA with Holly Randall meant something to me. Holly Randall shot my first book cover for The Life, which you can get on my store at shoplisaann.com. Holly Randall has been a part of my life since she was much younger because her mom, Suze Randall, shot me all through the 90s. When I came back in the industry in, let's say, 2003, and I was an agent, Suze shot my very first shoot back. Like, there's so many memories I have. And Suze was also the first woman that I knew in the business that was incredibly successful. The first woman that I knew in the business that would say pornographers are boring. Who wants to hang out with a bunch of pornographers? Because Suze had her own life and her own friends and her own activities and people she knew outside of the business. She helped me expand my mind. And to watch her daughter, Holly, have such a skill set, not just behind the camera. She's a great communicator. She has a podcast, Holly Randall Unfiltered, which is fantastic. I listen to it every single week. So that all meant something to me because when I go back to the ranch and I think about seeing Suze for the first couple of times when I was so nervous, I was driving to her Santa Monica studio at that time and I would go up the 405. It was right at Santa Monica Boulevard and I'd sit in traffic and I'd be so nervous going up there. And she was tough to shoot for. If you put on weight, she told you. She was honest and she made me a great model. She made me a great worker. She didn't tolerate being late, which is something I don't do anyway. I'm early to a fault. It's a thing of mine. All my friends know it. They make fun of me for it. But it's just how I like to roll. She made me the person that I am today when it comes to being incredibly professional. She taught me how to be a good model by being hard on me. I learned everything that I carried through my entire career from Suze about I could have money and I could have a nice life later. No other woman was talking to me about that in the business. It was all male dominated as well. The success stories were the men that owned these companies, but then there was Suze. And so she was a pace car for me. Then to watch Holly develop. So this whole beauty of like marking in time my 50th birthday with people that had an impact on my life that I don't even know if they know how big the impact was. When I was there, I got to have dinner with Susan Humphrey and Holly and her daughter, which was so great. It was spent so much to me because they have been a huge part of my life. So taking inventory in my life is really where this excitement comes from. The feeling of like, oh yeah, I've done that. Oh yeah, I've been there. Oh yeah, I have provided myself with the freedom to be able to have a team of people working with me that I can offer, you know, work to through all of the things that I'm doing, whether it's my podcast, whether it's out shooting photos with Ali, whether it's working with Sid on my social media. All of these things came because I worked really hard and set my life up to be in a position now where I'm not only working for myself, but I'm helping others work. There's such a sense of pride in where I'm at. And that's why this is such a big deal. So as this is a big deal and I know it's coming, I decided I would take inventory in something else in my life. Over the weekend, last weekend, because last week it was super nice out in New York. Like one day it was almost 80. So I was like, you know what we're doing this weekend, Lisa? It's going to be me and you. We're alone. We're not going to mess with work. We are going to break up with winter. It is going to be official. And how do we properly break up with winter? Let me tell you a little something about my childhood. When you grow up in an Italian culture, like serious, serious, serious Italians, there's things that other people don't know are happening in that Italian household. And I'll start with Saturdays. Saturdays were cleaning day. And it's not like how we clean now. We clean for a couple of hours. We go about our day. No, Saturdays was cleaning day. We wiped down the walls. We took everything out of the china cabinet, dusted the china cabinet. It's the whole reason I never wanted a china cabinet. You know, when I was getting married and my mom was helping me put my registry together, she's like, you know, you should put this on. These dishes are really nice. I go, no. Every Saturday of my childhood, I dusted dishes that were in a china cabinet that we never, ever used. I do not want any of that. It's just extra work. Little did I know then that I was already clamoring to be a minimalist. But you cleaned all day Saturday. And it was everything. You took if there were sweaters or things under your bed, you had to take them out. You had to dust. I mean, it's a nice way to live. There's no dust anywhere for sure. But it was all day Saturday we cleaned. And then four times a year, quarterly, you had to take everything out of all of your drawers and closets, wipe out your drawers, clean out your closet, and reorganize everything. And that was how we would keep from our seasonal clothes or clothes that didn't fit us anymore or things we didn't need, all of those things. So when it comes to me saying I'm going to break up with winter, this has to be a whole process. This has to be a task that I take on where I decide I'm going to take everything I own out of my closet. Absolutely every single thing is coming out. It's going to look like I'm moving. It was one of those jobs that halfway through, you survey the situation. You hate yourself for starting this project that now you can't get out of. You hate yourself because there's stuff everywhere. And really, you're at the point where you're like, man, I'd really like to kick back and watch some TV. Or man, I'd really like to go for a walk right now. Or there's so many things. I'd rather be working, okay? But I take a picture. I send it to Center. Center's like, what have you gotten yourself into? I'm like, yeah, this shit's going down. I broke up with winter by taking everything out of my closet, deciding what was going to be vacuum sealed and taken down into storage, and what was going to be donated or given to people, right? So some stuff, if it's good stuff, I'll give it to Ali, her and her friends will go through it. If it's stuff that just should go, it goes to Salvation Army. So there's this process going on. Shoes that I'm like, these are uncomfortable. Why am I keeping them? I should just replace them with a pair that's comfortable so that I don't grab these for a trip and go to do a signing and put these shoes on. And halfway through the signing, my feet are killing me. It was a lot of like that, like being real with what's in there. As a minimalist, this is something I picked up the other day on Josh and Ryan's podcast, The Minimalists, that you should love every item that you have. And people would say, well, I want to keep all of these things. Well, if you're a minimalist, you love everything that you've kept. You're keeping only your favorites, right? So I went through jeans and I realized like jeans, they accumulate with the jeans. The process of moving everything out, breaking up with winter, was done by Saturday night. And then Sunday, the job was to get the stuff down to storage and bring up summer and introduce summer into my closet. It was a fiasco that I am so happy about because my closet right now is nicer than it was when I even moved in here. It is so organized. I know everything that I have. I was able to go through the shoes. Like I have this big Vegas trip coming up. I'll be going to Vegas. I'll be going to the Crazy Horse 3 for 3 nights. I'll be doing some radio shows. I was able to put post-its on all the shoe boxes of the ones that I'm definitely taking to Vegas. Okay. I've like got myself pre-organized for the fact that after Vegas, then I have some events here in the city and then I have some other events coming up. So I was like, I wanted to take inventory of my wardrobe. I did it. Monday morning, I was at Salvation Army taking the clothes back. And what I didn't realize was, oh, winter decided to come back and greet us. And now all of my winter shit is completely packed. Like, I'm living in sweatshirts if it gets cold out, because I'm not bringing sweaters back up from downstairs. I am not bringing my puffer coat back up from downstairs. I donated 3 of my coats because I've had it for quite a few seasons. And the more you wash them, somehow like little crevices open and the stuffing starts to come out and it's all in your dryer. You're like, I don't know what I did this coat, but I don't think it's good. So all of this. It's been cold since then. I was supposed to go up with Laura and fly Nyon the other day. Halfway there over to the spot in Jersey, we got canceled because it was too windy and too cold. So there's been that. But I will say this. It's a project that reminded me of my childhood because I did it so often that I think if anybody else would have looked at the disaster I created on Saturday, they'd have been like, you're never going to get this done. This was a normal thing growing up. This is how we cleaned. You, on those quarterly times, on Saturdays, you're taking dishes out of a regular cabinet, wiping everything down, like going, but it was clean, but it's a lot. And so it wasn't a problem. I got it done and I'm so happy I got it done because now I feel free of so much extra stuff. I know everything that I have. I know what outfits I need, maybe a piece to, or looking for a top because I love these pants. Now I know I'm on a mission to pick up a couple items to mix into my wardrobe, to look my best for all these appearances I have coming up and be able to pack with ease without terrorizing my closet. In the winter, I had built all these extra cubes in my closet for sweaters. So when I was taking everything out, I had to take apart those cubes. They have those little knob things on them. You have this little like wooden mallet hammer thing. So I took them all apart because I was like, why should I keep them together? I might not need this many. Yeah, I only need half of them now. So the other half will go back down into my storage so that next winter when I have to bring sweaters up and they're all folded in my closet, that will be my life again. But till then, I get to live in this closet that now feels like a walk-in closet. It now feels like somewhat of a room. It's organized and it's beautiful. And I got to take 5 bags to Salvation Army on Monday morning. And that felt so good to know that things that I'm not using, somebody else can use. So I hope I inspire you to maybe pick one drawer at a time. Oh, I also did sock and underwear drawer, gym clothes drawer. I took all my drawers out too. So let's not get it twisted. This was not a half-assed job. This was a real deal. But socks are one of the most requested items at homeless shelters. So we know that Salvation Army will give those socks. Like there's things that you're not using that have just accumulated, gym clothes, things. It just feels good to give them away and let someone that needs them more than me use them and to have my drawers open with ease without having to stuff things down to close them. So I am back. And though winter is also back, I know that I can manifest summer and spring by having no options to be warm. I know that I will layer, but like when we were leaving to go over to Jersey to hop on Fly Nyon, the guy reached out to me and he's like, yo, you should probably bring some hats and gloves. I'm like, yeah, I packed them up over the weekend. So I'm just going to wear a long sleeve shirt. this is what we're going to do. But the closet project is done. The inspo was real, just like this inspo. One of our favorite guests of 2021. One of my favorite follows on social media. The last person I see every night before I go to bed is Coop Blackson. His book, The Magic of Surrender, which I've read twice now. His other book, You Are the One. Meaning you, my friend, are the one. Stop searching for the one because that one is right there. Joined today by our guest, Coop Blackson. Today, I get to be joined by one of our absolute favorite guests in history of the Lisa Ann Experience, the author of The Magic of Surrender, and our friend, Coop Blackson. How are you today, Coop?
Thanks for having me. Doing great.
It's great to have you. And look, I've read this book twice. I know a lot of my followers went out and got this book. And now you're releasing this book in the paperback version for those of us who like to travel and want to carry a lighter book.
Yes. Yeah. Paperback comes out May the 3rd. So yes.
And since we initially met, you were just jumped off the screen at all of my followers and myself. And I find myself going to your IG page at Coop Blackson every evening and just looking at what you're adding with just such intention. I love your posts. How do you create those moments every day to keep us kind of on track?
How do I create those moments? You know, I just honestly, it just comes from my heart and my soul. and I just do my best to feel what's on my heart and tuning into what I feel my clients are going through, what I feel people are going through, what I sense, what I feel, what I observe. And, you know, my intention has always been to serve and add as much value. And that's really why I create what I create. It's not so much about me. It's about how can I serve? How can I add value? And how can I put content out there? And so it just comes, it just comes. It just comes out. You know, it's nothing crazy. It just comes from my heart.
When you wrote your book, you shared experiences that made you understand the true reality of surrender. Now you're working with clients who you're hoping to get on this level with you to understand how valuable letting go is. And we are getting out of this pandemic, getting back out to exploring and enjoying the world again. What difference have you seen in the attitude of people with the gratitude that we are getting out?
I mean, I think I observe people more open. You know, I think the pandemic for 2 years really gave us a reality check in a certain sense. You know, it forced us to step back. It forced us to get off the hamster wheel for a moment. It forced us to evaluate what's important, what's real, what's true. It forced us to evaluate our identity. It forced us to evaluate our purpose and ourselves and what we want in life and where we're going in life. And I think so many of us, we were just caught up in a routine. We were caught up in doing the same old over and over again. Some of us, we were running so fast, but we didn't even know where we were actually running to. And so I think a gift of the pandemic has given us the opportunity to step back and observe ourselves, step back and question, step back and be more still. In the stillness, we can listen to the deeper truth. And I think when we're able to listen to our deeper truth, then we can realign ourselves. We can realign our vision. We can realign our intention. And so I think stepping back as life quickens again, as the world comes back again in a new variation and a new version, I'm definitely feeling people are grateful for things we took for granted, you know. And I think that's a beautiful thing, to live in a state of gratitude, because, you know, I think when we live life in a certain way, it can become easy to be immune to how magnificent this thing that we call life is. Even the simple things, even the everyday things, even just going out, being outside, exercising, being in the sun. You know, so I see, at least in LA, I see people going out, going bonkers, like, wow, it's amazing to just be outside in the park. When before it's like, just going to the park. And so I think it's a beautiful thing to be in touch with the profound gratitude for what it is to be human, for what it is to be alive, and those simple things that we take for granted, you know. And I think when we live in that state of gratitude, regardless of what's going on, life is pretty amazing. We have the opportunity to experience, bliss, joy, ecstasy, all of that good stuff. But the fact we also have the opportunity to experience the entire flavor, the entire tapestry, the entire rainbow of life with its heartbreak and its sadness and its grief. I mean, life, I think, would be pretty boring if it was just bliss, joy, you know, ecstasy all the time. And so, you know, in order for happiness to exist, we have to know the opposite. We have to know the contrast, you know. And so to be able to experience the whole and all that life has to offer, I think there's a renewed gratitude that I have, that I see people have. And I think living that way moving forward would be a beautiful thing.
I completely agree. And I've noticed, you know, I was out at a big dinner with friends the other night, and we looked around the restaurant, and not one table did anybody have their phone out.
There you go.
And I said, like, how this is like being at the Masters, like, because you're not allowed to have your phone at the Masters. And that's why a lot of people don't want to go. But I find it awesome to watch the Masters and see everybody's focused, paying attention. Their every thought is watching, right? And we sat there and I said, this is the new life. Like, we value that we're getting to sit across the table from our people, and we're now looking at our phones like they'll be there when we get home and we're alone. Why do we need to touch them now? And I think that's really spectacular. One of the things you recently talked about that I talk about a lot is gossip. The negativity behind gossip and the way it derails you from positive conversation. You explained this on an IG post, and I loved it. What made you think of that day?
To be honest, I don't even remember what I shared about gossip, because honestly, I just put stuff out and I let it go and I move on. But yeah, I think gossip is a low vibrational energy where we are focusing on other people and the negativity or the negative aspects of what other people are doing, and not necessarily on reality. And I think gossip serves nothing. When we gossip about other people, we bring them down. We bring ourselves down. We don't even realize that when we gossip, we're bringing ourselves down.
Yes.
We're not even just bringing another person down. And so sometimes I find it becomes easier for us to gossip, bring people down, tear people down, talk about what people are doing and not doing, because it also becomes a way we get to distract ourselves from ourselves. And it becomes a way we get to not deal with what we're feeling and who we are and what we're doing and what we're not doing. You know, oh, look at that person, what they're doing. And so I think gossip becomes a distraction from us really looking at what we want, looking at what we are, looking at what where we get to come more into alignment. And so I think gossip is an absolute waste of time, changes nothing, adds zero value. And
like you said, it is a low frequency. Yeah. And that is where we never want to be. We never want to be on a low frequency. We want to be on the highest frequency possible. And it's something that shows you to do more. When people used to gossip around me, because I made it a rule years ago that when I was working in environments, like, there could be no gossip. And there was a thing like, this should inspire you to read more or to get involved with your community or do things, because then you have other things to bring to the table to make conversation about that are high frequency conversations.
Or to celebrate. Or to actually just celebrate other people and other people's success, you know, because typically gossip tends to be negative, you know? And so I think if we are going to speak about other people, my thing is celebrate their success, celebrate another person's success. Many times we see someone succeeding or see someone living a certain life or see someone doing something that we'd like to do, and we gossip and bring them down to make ourselves feel better about what we're not doing, to make ourselves feel better within ourselves. And so when we gossip too, many times we go into lack and we go into scarcity. And so when we're able to look at someone who is achieving, creating, whether we like them or not, whether we agree with them or not, but the fact that they're doing that, the fact that someone is achieving and creating and living their best life in whatever version that is, it opens up the possibility that it's capable. It opens up the possibility that that we can do it too. If they're doing it, we can do it. And so I think when we celebrate another person's success, when we celebrate another person's achievement, when we celebrate another person's expansion, what actually happens is we begin to open ourselves in the celebration. We begin to open ourselves to be available to that frequency, that energy, that possibility, that experience within our own mind, within our own nervous system. And so I say celebrate another person's success, because when you celebrate it, your subconscious mind also doesn't even know the difference between reality and imagination, between what you're celebrating being yours and not yours. And so the more you celebrate, the more you become available to what it is you're celebrating. And also you're just expanding positivity in the world.
You know, I think the work that you do, the writing that you've done, the communication you have is so clear. And I think it can be hard for people who are on the internet enough, maybe watch a little bit too much TV, because TV stories seem to want to bring in the negative as their hitch, right? It's clickbait.
Yes.
It's what we've all become conditioned as, this is normal reporting, when really it's not normal reporting at all. And then it becomes part of someone's world where they think that is considered normal. And though it may seem normal on the outside looking in, it feels better when you just say, I'm never doing it again.
Yeah.
And when I made that choice to have better conversations with people that were more fulfilling and maybe shorter, don't stay on the phone for as long, talk about great things, and then we get off the phone instead of finding that time to fall into that dark space and that low frequency.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You talked a bit about dreams. So when I go to bed at night, Coot, I visualize things that I'd like, whether it's trips with friends, whether it's just people. It's usually people, friends in my life. And that's the story I tell myself to go to sleep. So your take on dreams and visualizing how your dreams become your reality.
Dreams, dreams as in actual dreams at night, or dreams as in goals and visions?
Daydreams is as I should probably call them, right?
Yeah.
Dreams as in goals and visions. Dreams as in manifesting. This is manifesting. Where I see myself in a year, five years, 10 years. Yeah.
Look, I think it's beautiful to have a vision for yourself and see yourself. The only warning I would give is we have to be careful to not put limitations on the infinite and put limitations on the universe, because the truth is the mechanism with which we use to visualize the mind, our identity, is only able to visualize to a degree to the current level of our consciousness and capacity. And the mind is not able to see the infinite possibilities of dreams, the infinite possibilities of manifestation. And many of us, we're not aware that when we visualize and we kind of locking in on a picture, locking in on a visual, we sometimes begin to limit our availability to the infinite possibilities of life, the infinite possibilities of what life can manifest. And so have a dream, have a vision, but don't get attached to what it's even going to look like, because what life can do and how life can manifest, and this is where surrender comes in, what life can do, the intelligence of life, the grace of life, how life can flow, is way bigger than anything that you and I can imagine with our limited little ego's perspective. We often visualize a peanut, thinking the peanut is the most amazing thing we could have, when the universe is seeking to give us a freaking infinite buffet of possibility, an unlimited buffet of possibilities. But no, we've got to have this peanut, because that's all we can see. And the peanut seems like a big deal in this moment. So I'm not saying don't visualize the peanut, but just don't limit yourself to the peanut. And so I always invite people to not ask. The question that we're kind of taught to ask is, well, what do you want? Get clear on what you want. Get clear on your vision. Okay, it's great. And you can manifest a good life that way, a great life that way, a magnificent life that way. But there will always be a level of limitation. If you are interested in manifesting in an unlimited, infinite way, realize that you are not the manifester. You are not the one that needs to manifest. Life is manifesting. Life is the source of manifestation. So you move from asking the question, what do I want, this limited egoic I, and ask the question. Just even the question starts opening you up to an infinite game of possibility. What is it that life wants to manifest through me? What is it that life wants to express through me? What is it that this infinite intelligence of life that has been around for billions of years is breathing me, functioning all of existence? What is it that life wants to create through me and dream through me and travel through me and podcast through me and write through me? And just allowing yourself to open your availability to the infinite possibilities, then you become completely available. To me, that position is a position of infinite availability, infinite receptivity. Then there's no limits on what life can happen. There's no limits on how it can happen. There's no limits on how things can show up, because you're available. Many of us, we don't realize we're not quite available. We think, no, it's got to kind of be this, when life is seeking to give us something else. And so, sometimes we get so caught up on the thing, thinking that the thing is the thing or the goal is the goal. And I say many times the goal that we think we want is not necessarily the goal. The goal is the carrot. The goal is the necessary puzzle piece that takes us on an evolutionary journey so that we can grow and learn and evolve. So don't get attached to that vision. Don't get attached to that dream, because it may not be that. It's the journey that you need to go on so that you can become more of your authentic true self, so that you then become more prepared and ready for the real dream and vision that life is seeking to express to you. Look at Nelson Mandela, 27, 26 years in prison. I'm sure he didn't write that on his poster board, vision board, but he moved in a direction, and you can't even plan that kind of life. You can't even strategize that kind of life. But if you go in the direction of your authentic calling, if you go in the direction of your authentic vision, if you go in the direction of your soul's guidance, that's when you open yourself to that infinite possibilities. And what life can manifest through you, I think, is bigger than what we can imagine for ourselves, and will often surprise us in truly magnificent ways. And so what is it that life wants to express through me? Feel that, tune into that. And it's great when you, let's say when you fall asleep, to kind of hold visions. But I would also say, if you're going to tune into something, don't get attached to the visual. Focus on the feeling, because the feeling doesn't have a limitation. The feeling of how would it feel to have abundance. How, don't even put, yeah, you can have a number. I want to make 10 million, 20 million, a billion, whatever. But don't even put, don't get so attached to that. Focus on the feeling of abundance, the feeling of love. Sometimes we get so limited on, my soulmate has to be this tall and look like this and have gone to this school and I'm going to have this color hair. When the truth is, maybe what you need is not what you think you need. Maybe the person that you need and what your soul needs might be a surprise. And because we're so attached to it looking a certain way, we're not even available. We're not even available to the way that universe wants to bring it to us because no. My soulmate's got to be this person and it's got to look like this that we're not available to. Something more amazing. And so
to
don't
me,
get
that's the real missing link with dating apps is the disconnect, right? You're actually shopping for something. It's kind of like going on Amazon and you see all these different criterias. And I'm not on them, but my girlfriends that are on them, I like to look through the apps. You know, I find I'm curious about it. And there's all these little, you know, avatars and things that people check. And I'm like, oh, this is just so strange to me. I mean, like, what happens if you didn't realize it, but you're going to meet this guy at the post office when you're dropping something off, but you're no longer looking because you're on this dating app and you just figure you got your week all lined up and you're going to go out. This is where I feel there's a huge disconnect.
And the person may be nothing like what your personality expects. Because often too, what we think is our type isn't always our type. What we think sometimes is our type is really a projection of our conditioning. And so then we meet someone and like, ah, they fit my type, but they fit the type and association of how I have love programmed in my consciousness from childhood. And so we think it's chemistry. Yeah, we think it's chemistry, but it's really, you know, my wound matches your wound and that fits together. And we don't have chemistry, we have shittistry. And that's what attracts us together. And so, so I think we have to truly move beyond that limited way of thinking and just truly be open and available. And I tell people, if you want to find love, stop seeking love. Stop looking for love. Stop chasing love. Doesn't mean you shouldn't go on a dating app, but stop seeking love. Instead, work on yourself to remove all the blockages, to remove all the limitations, to remove all of the stories, the beliefs, the illusions that prevent you from realizing, from loving yourself and realizing and knowing the infinite love that you are as a soul, as a being, that what you and I are essentially is a manifestation of love. We are love itself. And because from childhood, through our conditioning and our parents, we weren't loved, we were loved kind of conditionally to a degree. And, you know, we learned to be who we thought we needed to be in order to get love, validation, and approval. So love was conditional. And so we think that love is something we need to get outside of ourselves. But the truth is, we are love. And I think when we reconnect with the fact that what we are is love, and we stop seeking it and chasing it and looking for it, trying to get it from outside and making someone else the source of love, someone else the source of the love that we didn't get, then we stop seeking. And when we stop seeking, we just start being. And we start being and we start radiating that love. We start, you know, expressing that love. We start loving life and loving everything around us and loving everything and everyone as a love affair, and your heart is open. And I believe that like a flower, when you're radiating the love that you are and living the purpose for why you're here, the right alignment will find you, you know, because you become incredibly attractive. You become incredibly radiant in that open-hearted manifest expression where you're not seeking it or chasing it, but you're available, but you're just living the love that you are. And I think, you know, relationship is a mirror. The people, the person you attract to you really is a mirror manifestation of yourself, a mirror manifestation of an aspect of your consciousness, reflecting back to you parts of you that you need to heal, integrate, embrace, learn, and see. Essentially, there is no relationship out there. It looks like there's a relationship out there, but there's no relationship out there. There's a relationship out there that's a manifestation and a projection of you. So you're in relationship with yourself. And so the quickest way you could say to manifest love is realize that you attract you to you in the form of the people that are showing up, you know? And so when we able to shift ourselves and connect with ourselves and love ourselves and be available and open, then we just become much more magnetic and attractive to what we are.
the energy around you just starts to surround you, and you become more open and you become more receptive, and you naturally become more social when you're not in search of, because you're not now busy with that,
yes,
right?
Because
the in search of keeps people very busy. And when they're busy, they're not just engaging with their friends, where you could just naturally run into somebody or meet somebody through somebody just without even trying.
Yeah,
I know your story from reading your book, The Magic of Surrender, but sure. Kute, I have to ask you, how did you get here? How did you get to this place of understanding that you were truly limitless?
Wow. As a young kid, I was born in Ghana, West Africa. My father's from Ghana. My mother's Japanese. I grew up in London. Now I live in the US. So I always felt like I was just a soul, that I didn't belong to, you know. I think that's one of the blessings for me of not belonging to one nationality, so to speak, because I felt like I'm from everywhere and I'm from nowhere, and I'm not really limited to, oh, I'm African. Oh, I'm Japanese. Oh, I'm British. Oh, and now I'm American, you know, and now I kind of have a Mexican residency. So I'm kind of Mexican, you know, so I feel like I'm everything and I feel like I'm a soul. And so as a young boy, I was a very empathetic kid. And so I really would feel people's suffering very deeply. And there was a part of me as a young kid that just wanted to alleviate people's suffering. And so that was a deep desire. I didn't know what that would look like. It didn't make sense to me, but it was just a feeling. And so I grew up in this, shall we say, spiritual environment that some would say is a bit unusual, but honestly, it just seemed quite normal to me because that's all I knew. So my first memories were literally seeing a crippled woman crawling on the floor, and she picks up the sand that this man walks on, wipes it on her face, and stands up. And so week after week, I grew up seeing blind people see and deaf people hear and people stand up out of wheelchairs. And the same man who sent she picked up would look at a woman in a wheelchair and say, stand up, why are you in this wheelchair? The same man, this man was my father, the same man would look at a person with crutches and say, hey, take your crutches away. And he'd, you know, touch their hands and they would start walking. And so I grew up around miracles and the sense of like limitlessness and possibility, which I just thought was the way life was, to be honest. It didn't even seem like anything special, didn't seem like a big deal. It was all I knew. So from a very young age, that was imprinted, like anything is possible, you know, anything is possible. Oh. because I saw it. And so that began my journey, you know, age eight, I forget if we spoke about it last time, but age eight, I started speaking in my father had 300 churches, and he was a very spiritual, mystical kind of guy, luckily for me. And so he had 300 churches. So age eight, I started speaking in my father's churches. Age 14, I was ordained as a minister in my father's organization.
We didn't speak about this.
Oh my God. So yeah, age eight, I'm thrown into the audience. My father said, speak. So that began my speaking career. And 14, I basically was ordained as a minister officially with a whole ceremony. And my father said, my son is taking over. And I'm thinking, I am. We didn't have a conversation about this. And, you know, but you know that feeling when your heart sinks, and because you know
it was
something's
right.
Not quite right. Something's not quite right. Something's not aligned. Because I knew I wanted to help people, but I knew that it wasn't through the structure of a church or my father's organization or religion in a certain sense. I just wanted to help people, inspire people, you know? And so I just didn't have the courage to tell my father the truth, to confront my father, because as a young kid who wanted his father's love, what do you do? And so I said nothing. And my fear was, if I dared to be myself, if I dared to speak my truth, that I'm going to lose his love. I'm going to be outcast. I'm going to be alone. So for 4 years, I said nothing and went through a real inner turmoil and inner questioning and conflict and up and down roller coaster. But when I turned 18, I had a decision to make. I felt a calling to come to the US, specifically Los Angeles, because as a young kid, my father had all of these books on his bookshelf, in terms of like thousands of books in self-help, psychology, spirituality, Eastern mystics, Western mystics, you know, Wayne Dyer, Louise Hay, Chopra. So I would go and I'd read all these books, and I would literally read hundreds of books from 8 to 18. This became my obsession. And all of the authors, at least the popular ones, Louise Hay, Chopra, they lived in Southern California. They lived in Los Angeles. So I thought, This is the Mecca. I want to meet these people. I want to do what they're doing. I want to go into this field. And so I decided, I felt this calling to come to the US. I decided to not go to university, which everyone thought I was bonkers and crazy. But, you know, sometimes when your soul guides you and what your soul guides you to do won't always make sense to your mind, and it won't always be convenient. But what I have found repeatedly in my life is when you surrender to your soul and you listen to your soul and you don't betray your soul and you don't compromise your soul and you listen to it without compromise, you will always end up in the right place with the right people, even though the route that you take and the road that you take may not be the one you most expect. And so I felt this calling to come to the US, had no idea how it was going to happen. I looked into my future and I saw that I could follow the expected path and take over my father's, we're talking hundreds of thousands of people, his huge operation, and be successful. But what kind of success is it if I don't have myself? And you can't, that I can't be truly fulfilled and happy being someone that I'm not, living someone else's life. And I felt such a sense that I'd be committing soul suicide. And I felt this deep pain in my heart when I felt if I were to go down this path. And so 4 years later, I mustered up the courage. You know, sometimes people say you have to be fearless. I was terrified to make this decision, but I knew what I had to do. And I had the conversation with my father, which was heartbreaking, devastating, terrifying, all rolled into one.
Yeah.
Told him I wasn't going to take over. We didn't speak for 2 years, which was really, really, really difficult, you know, as an 18-year-old kid. Really hard. Yeah. Hard for him and then hard for me because now we didn't speak. But I knew that this is what I had to do. And cut a long story short, I felt so alone. Like, universe, life has given me this vision, and now how the hell do I manifest this vision? And the next day, I think it was weeks later, someone hands me a magazine called The Economist. I feel this strange feeling. This is where we have to follow the clues. You know, life gives us clues. And I look in the back of the magazine, it says the American government's giving away 55,000 green cards in the green card lottery. And that's when I knew I was gonna win this green card, like sure about it. I start talk about visualization. I'm visualizing myself winning the green card. I cut out a piece of paper that wrote green card with my name on it. I visualized the president of the United States shaking my hand. Every day I go to the mailbox waiting for the notification from the law firm. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Until the very last day, nothing. Now I'm thinking I'm being completely abandoned by life. I'm mad at the world. I decide to pack my bags to go to the US and I'm not coming back, regardless visa or not. That night, it was September the 18th. We get a phone call from America. The law firm I applied through says, "Is this Mr. Blackson?" I said, "Yes." He says, "You want a green card?" And I'm jumping for joy, celebrating, going crazy. In the midst of my celebration, I hear this voice that says, "Why do you seem so surprised? You knew. Did you lose faith?" And I think many of us, we lose faith right before that final moment and we turn back and we give up. We quit right before that breakthrough. Because often right before the breakthrough is that breakdown, is the darkness that we have to go through so that we can truly grow through to evolve. And literally, I end up winning this green card, 18 years old, come to America months later, two suitcases, knew no one in the country, $800, one suitcase full of clothes, one suitcase full of self-help books, literally, and showed up in Los Angeles, in Venice Beach, and cried my eyes out for probably six months, because I had no clue what
you're
I was
lonely.
Freaking doing.
Yeah, and you were and lonely. That, as a young man, you were lonely.
And that began my journey, you know, in the U.S.
I love this because it all led up to where it had to go. Had you not been speaking at 8 years old, you would have not been as confident to then speak up at 18 years old.
Yeah.
You were also smart enough as a young man to listen to your inner voice and to entertain it. And you had to go against your dad and take that chance where you lost him in your life for a couple of years. And I feel a lot of people are very conditioned by that response of, I don't want to let someone else in my life down, so I'll suffer and not have my dreams fulfilled to keep peace. Mm. And you went against that and then everything worked out. You reconnected with your father. Your life is actually incredibly beautiful and so inspiring to so many people. You put your words on paper that can help so many. And you are now the author of one of these books that would be in the same shelf with the list of authors that you were reading at such a young man. This all manifested itself flawlessly.
Yeah. And many of them endorsed my first and second book, which was amazing, you know?
Yeah. That's amazing. And you've written how many books now, Coot?
This is the first book, national bestseller, You Are the One. Second book, bestseller, Magic of Surrender. Yeah.
So you followed your own path, and we're all just really happy to be a part of it. You are an inspiring human who can remind everyone on a daily basis to live in a limitless mind space and to just do, be, and think and feel that sense of gratitude that I do a live premiere on YouTube where I sit with my viewers and we get to be in the chat while we're watching the video component of the podcast. And yours had the most amazing response on my room. Cause you know, you get to know your people that are in your rooms when you do a live and you know who they are by their avatar or by their name. And I just remember how it felt to be sitting there and hearing this just elated sense from everyone. And I can't wait to feel that again, to share you again and make sure everyone pre-orders this book right here, The Magic of Surrender. Now is going to be available May 3rd on paperback, am I correct?
May 3rd, the book is available. You can get it on Amazon. For everyone that pre-orders the book, I wanted to do something special where on May the 7th, I'm doing a virtual online live event for 2 to 3 hours. We're going to dive deep, transformation, going to add a ton of value. Pre-order the book on Amazon. The seminar is called Reinvent Live, where I'm going to teach you how to reinvent yourself, how to let go of the past, connect to your power, share your gifts with the world. And so it's going to be a deep dive transformational seminar. Just need to go to the website, kutblackson.com/reinvent seminar. So KUTEBLACKSON, kutblackson.com/reinvent seminar. And then just enter your receipt info on the website. And then that gets you access to the May 7th event, as well as a whole bunch of free gifts and all of that good stuff.
I wrote it down. I'll make sure it lands right here under the YouTube post so everybody knows exactly where to click and find it. Coot, thank you for all of you do, for who you are, and for gracing us with your presence again.
Thank you for having me back and your warm welcome.
Check out Coot's Reinvent Life Seminar. It sounds amazing. You need to follow him on IG at Coot Blackson. Everything there is there is Linktree. You can see some reels of his motivational speaking and his events that he does and how inspired everybody is in the room. The energy just looks so awesome and it comes right off on the screen. I was thrilled to be able to have the opportunity to have another conversation with Coot. If you're new to the podcast, you might want to go back and search last year when he was on the first time. It was a great conversation. It was after I had just finished reading The Magic of Surrender for the very first time. So check out his work. Paperback is coming out. When you purchase the paperback, you get invited to the Reinvent Life Seminar. It is now time that we've been all waiting for. It is the mailbag exercise of the Lisa Ann Experience. If you want to be a part of the mailbag and not creep in there, and not send an email every day that isn't a question, and not tell me unnecessary things, do it. AskLisaAnn@gmail.com. Here we are. I'm going to clock this for you all every week. It took me 5 hours this week to put together this mailbag. No, there aren't a lot of questions, but I had to go through a lot of nonsense to get here. I had to really dig deep. So 5 hours of my life just lost. Just lost. Just gone. Over. Done. Just surrendered. 1 hour gets dedicated to Robert. You would know what I'm talking about with Robert if you were part of Dudes Do Better. Follow Dudes Do Better on social media at Dudes Do Better. Creeper conversation right there as well. But Dudes Do Better is exclusively on my YouTube channel, The Real Lisa Ann, brought to you by Mail Ultra Core. Use my promo code Lisa25 at mailultracore.com. Here we are with the mailbag, and the first one is in the subject matter. There is nothing in the body of the email. It is straight up subject matter, and it says, come to Chicago Exotica. This is from Gallus Powell. Okay, Gallus, heads up. Obviously not a listener to the podcast. If you are, you have not been staying on board for the tour dates, because I will be in Las Vegas at the Crazy Horse 3 during Exotica Chicago. Super sorry about that. Had this on my schedule before I got the dates for Exotica. I will be at the other Exoticas, Miami, New Jersey, and DC, but just not this one. We have another one. Just in the subject matter. Nobody. Is this the weirdest thing ever? I get it. I get it. People don't know how to write out an envelope. I know this because I have a bookstore, and on my bookstore, I get addresses written out that are like name, zip code, street, but no definition. Is it a street, lane, road, or anything? And I have to write the person back, and I have to go through all of this, and I have to ask them to just cut and paste what's on like a billing statement for their address because, oh, well, I don't write anything out. I get the people that I might write mail. But what's up with the people that don't know how to write an email? I mean, it says it for you. Subject. And then you put the body in that big square. What do you think the big square is for? Is that just optional? Anywho, how do you escape from the past? Do you have feelings of guilt? Have you ever tried to search for God? This is from Abba. Really deep thinker here, all in the subject matter question. I don't think we should escape from the past. The past is part of our life. And that part of our life is what put us towards the future, right? All that we've done is who we are. We've all made mistakes. There's no doubt about it. The only way to get past mistakes, though, is to just forgive yourself and move on, because that's the choice we have, forgiving ourselves and moving on. There's no reason to dwell. There's no need to be hard on yourself. Take that beat, find your forgiveness, forgive yourself. And for you, guilt, search for God. I don't really have guilt. I understand religion very much so, but I think this is a book for everyone because the language right here is all about letting go. The magic of surrender, letting go, can set you free. And so to escape from the past makes me think that somebody needs to let go and forgive themselves and feel better about the life that they're living right now. Next one is from Paul. Hi, Lisa. Forgive my ignorance. I'm wondering if you receive royalties each time a scene of yours is viewed. If not, is that something that more recent contracts would cover? I imagine, given your catalog of work, that scenes are probably viewed millions of times a day. Do you know the viewing numbers? By the way, I'm a big fan. Can I say that my favorite scene of yours is Brett Rossi in the cowboy scene? I directed that scene and produced that scene. Thank you so much. We do not get royalties. The tracking system would be very complicated, though not impossible, complicated, because remember, a lot of these scenes do get put up on tube sites that aren't paying anyone for the content. It's stolen content. The only way to get paid for your own content is to own it. So that's why I had my own production company for years, and I was able to do distribution, whether it be through DVD, whether it be to sell to cable companies, whether it be to sell online. So there is a way to make money and own the content and get somewhat of residuals, but you have to put your money forward first. So you have to invest in the product to get the return. If you just invest your time in the product, which would be doing a scene, you get paid a flat rate for that scene. You go about your day. So it's very similar to any other business. It's really about, we didn't set it up with a way of royalties from the jump. Companies transition so often. There's not a long, stable force of company. It would just be very complex, though it would be great. It's just not something that we do. So owning their own content is the way to go. Now, this brings me to OnlyFans. The reason OnlyFans is soaring the way that it is, and the reason so many members of talent are finding great success on OnlyFans, is because it is royalties. They are making the pure money back from the content that they're sharing. They did produce that content, though, so that expense is on them. They own the content by producing it, and then they're able to make unlimited years of money by reusing that content like I do with my library on OnlyFans. As you can continue to post those scenes and recycle that content. So it's about ownership, and ownership gets you those royalties. That's how it works in the business. But for so many years of not getting royalties and then OnlyFans coming on the scene, you can easily see why talent is really leaning in, because they're getting to really enjoy the fruits of their labor. Thank you, Paul. It wasn't an ignorant question. It was a great question. Okay, we've got one from Mahesh. Dear Lisa, if you could go back in time, what would you have done to change your lifestyle? Would you have gone to another profession? Has the porn industry changed anything in your outlook in life today? Yours sincerely, Mahesh. Mahesh, kudos on writing a properly worded email, properly documented, proper punctuation, well for you. Okay, so this is a question I get a lot. So I wouldn't change anything. This is the life that I've lived, and I've gotten to travel, and I open with talking about the gratitude that I have for just realizing the experiences that I've been able to have that many people will never get to have. I've lived a very unique life. And so there's a sense of pride I have in that more than I ever had. The one thing I will say, has the porn industry changed my outlook on anything in life today? When young people or people that want to get into the industry come to me, you know, there's something that I like to share that I don't think people realize. And the level of intimacy that you share in the public forum by putting yourself out there as a performer in the adult industry confuses the masses. And what it does is, because of the chemical release when somebody does watch the content and do their thing, that chemical release causes some sort of a form of confusion, a lust, a love, an infatuation, obsession. And then the fan presence becomes very heavy. When I started, we didn't have the internet, so I didn't have to mentally prepare for this. But as the internet started, I never really would have thought that people would be so confused to think that just because they enjoyed your scenes per se, that they would actually one day be able to enjoy you. So I let people know, hey, so you know, be prepared for a lifetime of sexual harassment, of stalkers, of obsessive people, of fans demanding your time. Like, it's not like any other walk of fame. It's not like being an athlete. It's not like being an actor, an actress, a director, a producer. Nothing will compare to the level of fear that presents itself from somebody stepping in front of the camera in such an intimate setting. So it's never that I'm trying to talk anyone out of it, because there is a way to set up your life forever financially and see the world and do so many incredible things. But I would say I never would have predicted that on the daily basis, I'd spend anywhere from 5 to 7 hours a day partially here pushing people back, like, hey, you know, you're becoming a little bit too forward. Hey, you're sending me a ton of emails. Hey, you're tweeting at me every 5 minutes. Hey, you're blocked from this platform. You're coming in on this platform. Like, hey, I would have never predicted that. I would have never predicted that fans would be so obsessively in love with me that if they saw me in person, they would be over the top, demanding, insisting on things. I wouldn't have expected that at this age, me just sharing things on social media would lead to people being like, oh, I saw you in a picture at Central Park. I'd like to go to the park with you. Like, I never would have believed that it would make people impose themselves on me. To me, it was a job that I did and a lifestyle that I had. But when we're done working, we collect a paycheck, we go about our day. But when you've entered into this level of intimacy that you share in the public forum with people, your day is never over. Nobody understands the job. Everybody makes it about them. It is very personal. It is very intimate. And with that comes a great responsibility. And that responsibility is toxic. It's heavy. It's exhausting. It's scary. It's scary for my friends. It's scary for where I live. It's constantly a fear factor. It's someone else always going next level to be your friend, to spend time with you, to want to be with you, to propose to marry to you, to just that. So the level of that for some, I think, is going to be really hard to process, especially when they're not in the business anymore, because it doesn't end. It doesn't end at all. It doesn't go away. It doesn't diminish. It doesn't get less. So with that said, like, I do live events, which is a great place, the only place that I will meet people and do a photo. We get to have a stop and chat a couple of minutes. I do cameo calls on the Cameo app, a 2-minute phone call. I do what I'm willing to do, but those are my work things. But my free time is consumed with looking over my shoulder and being a bit afraid of the obsessive nature of others who have formed a one-way relationship with me over the intimate experience they think we shared, which is confusing to them, not me. I did a job. I did a legal job. I paid a shit ton of taxes. I've contributed to society. I take care of myself. I don't work the system. I do everything right. But I get this heavy breathing, intoxicating, constant. And it's male and female. Like, I get it both ways. But that access point has come from that intimacy, that person feeling some type of way. Then it confuses the narrative of who I am in society. I'm a human first. I deserve to be treated like a human first. I'm a businesswoman. I'm a company owner. I'm an employer. I'm a manager. There's so many things that I am those things do not get acknowledged, because when somebody constantly is impeding on my time, like sending emails every day or being obsessive or whatever, then I realize that they don't see me as who I am and don't realize that I have a lot of other things that I want to be doing and need to be doing. So that heaviness is something nobody could have predicted until the internet came out about. But here we are. So that's the one thing that's changed. It's made me have to live a very private life. It's made me be very guarded with my friends. It's made me have to hire security. It's made me have to be very specific from everything to what time I go to the airport, to what airline I fly, to everything I do. And you know, a couple of weeks ago, me and my girlfriends were out and we went to this spot that I love, and a bunch of people there recognized me. And so they were asking me for things, and I was just trying to enjoy the conversation with my girlfriends, and they were pacing back and forth waiting for me to get up. Like, I won't go to the bathroom in a public place. So I told my friends, like, we have to leave, you know, it was getting late, but I was like, we have to leave because I'm going to have to go to the bathroom. I know if I go to the bathroom, somebody will follow me into the bathroom and will be standing there outside of the stall. So when I go to a restaurant, wherever I go, unless I have security that will stand outside of the stall with me, which we didn't that night, we just casually went out like normal people, which was crazy, something I never do. So I can't go to the bathroom. So that's a fear factor because I know somebody's going to be there. And even Holly told a story on her podcast, Holly Randall Unfiltered, about one day during the day, we were out to lunch in LA and I walked to the bathroom and a guy followed me to the bathroom, was like blocking the door when I went to leave the bathroom. Like, he was going to push me in the bathroom, and she saw him and she stopped him. But that's normal. It's normal. It's normal to people. They think it's normal. People think this is normal. And that's from the confusion by the intimacy created, by the content created, by the job that I did, that people just don't have enough common sense to realize it's a fantasy. It's not a reality. Next question. Hi, Lisa. It's Jean-Michel. Next question is, dear Lisa, and by the way, well-written email. Hope you're doing fine. My question is, how do you manage your social media? Do you have a strategy? Is somebody helping you with pictures? Can you let me know? And if you can, answer this question. So thank you in advance. Best regards, Jean-Michel from the Netherlands. I hope you listen to me all the way from the Netherlands. I got to visit the Netherlands once. Nicest people in the world, for sure, in the Netherlands. Same with Australia, but I think the Netherlands is like one step, because it's one step earthier and more just so culture-based and so beautiful and so pure. I loved it there. So you live in a beautiful place. And yes, how do I manage my social media? Do I have a strategy? Is someone helping me with pictures? Let's just answer all of the above. So I have a team that works with me on my social media. One person is full-time, that's Sinner. Sinner helps me with my posts. We talk about photo sets that I'm going to be doing, what the needs are. Sinner will find, like, it's National Strawberry Month or it's Read a Book Day or what have you. And Sinner will provide me with those lists. And then I know when I'm shooting photos with my photographer, Allie, that I will take books out with me, or I will have strawberries, or I'll be cooking, or whatever the tasks are at hand. I also work with a social media company who helps me with all of the different flyers that I'm doing, with all the different social media clips beyond what Kay, my editor, does for the podcasts. And that team I get together with once a month. We sit down and we talk about future events I have coming up, how we're going to properly market them, when I might boost some posts, what I might be doing with this, what things are trending on Instagram and TikTok, when we're using hashtags, when we're not using hashtags, how I'm going to go about marketing something. So that's a whole nother thing. And I would say social media is probably anywhere from 25 to, let's say, 35 hours a week on my end, a minimum. And that's not just taking photos, but it's getting the ideas together for where we're going to take the photos, the wardrobe for the photos, all of the things that we're going to be doing with the photos. And then the posts, the writing out of the post. I write out all of the posts that are going to go out with all of the podcasts. I write out all of the posts that are going to go out with the events that I'm doing. So I've got to look up the address. I've got to find all the tags. I've got to get the social media stuff. And a lot of times, the accounts that I'm working with have a different account for their Insta, their Twitter, their Facebook. So I've got to cut and paste all of those and put them on a Word document with all of the verbiage for the events. So maybe it's closer to 40 hours now that I'm sitting here doing the math, but it's a lot. But it is the way that I'm sharing my life with the world. It is the way that I'm interacting with businesses. It is the way that I'm doing marketing. And it is the way that I'm earning part of my income. So it's a job. And it's something that I do that I truly enjoy. It's got its ups, it's got its downs, but it is a strategy. And 5 days a week, there's phone calls on the strategy. And 6 days a week, there's work being done on the posts, on how we're marketing the posts, on different areas that I'm going to, on proper tagging. So it is a constant job. And it does take a team. And I am the leader of that team. Last question right here is from TJ. TJ says, as someone who loves sports and traveling, what stadium is your favorite to visit? Also, does the city that it's in factor in your decision? This is an easy one for me. And yes, the city does factor in. And this is from TJ from West Deptford. TJ, I have a thing for PNC Park. I also have a thing for Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Growing up in Easton, Pennsylvania, about an hour north of Philly, my first trip to Pittsburgh, I felt like I was in a different state. It's so different. People are more chill. It's not aggressive like the city of Philly. It's not quite as much like it's the cutest, greatest city. And I can remember clearly the very first time I came in from the airport under the tunnel and saw PNC Park, saw the football stadium, just saw the city. I remember a lot of stuff from Batman was shot there. So when you see that, you could see the skyline and all that. Just, I loved the people at PNC Park. And I went to quite a few games there and all the times that I used to go back and dance. I'd go back during baseball season, go to a game. I've been at some Steelers games too. But I just felt that of all the baseball parks I've been to, all the stadiums I've been to, people were the least aggressive in Pittsburgh. They were just enjoying the game. There were a lot of families. They have that family section there where everything's a dollar. So if you have kids, your hot dogs, your waters, your sodas. And I was like, oh, I like the vibe. Also, Toronto Blue Jay Stadium's pretty awesome as well, because those people don't even throw their peanut shells on the ground. They're just so clean because it's Canadians. But PNC Park would be my thing. Pittsburgh is a city that I love. I love the people there. There's just enough of everything. And so that is my answer. And that's a really good question. I like when we get those. Thank you. If you want to be part of the mailbag, asklisaann@gmail.com. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review my podcast. I really appreciate you listening. I will sign off right here, but come right back in with tour dates because I've added a couple since we last spoke. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Lisa Ann Experience. Here we are for the tour dates, and I've added Nashville. I've added Orlando, Florida. I've been busy over here. So we know that coming up April 27th through 30th, I will be in Las Vegas at the Crazy Horse 3. Then on May 14th, Dave and Buster's in New York City, right in Times Square. I'll be signing there from 12 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, May 14th. Then the evening, aka nighttime, like midnight, I will be hosting a wild party at Harbor, New York City. We are going to get it. There will be dancing. There will be drinking. It will be fun. Then I go to St. Louis for the Birdies for Bipolar Charity Golf Event, the Dotem with TMA STL. That's May 19th and 20th. Dave and Buster's in Orlando. That's right, Orlando. I am coming for you on June 12th, just one day. The signing is 6 to 10 p.m. Orlando, Florida. Dave and Buster's, June 12th. I'll be doing 3 Exoticas. Miami, July 15th through 17th. New Jersey, October 21st through 23rd. And D.C., December 2nd through 4th. Nashville, I'm coming for you another Dave and Buster's. That's right, July 29th. I will be there. That signing is from 5 to 10 at the Dave and Buster's on Opry Mills Drive. All of these flyers go out on my social media so you can stay in touch. Everything is at the same address, at The Real Lisa Ann. You've got my Twitter, my Facebook, my IG, my TikTok. Stay tuned for more updates on tour dates. Again, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Lisa Ann Experience.